Specialized Trust Company. I was introduced to the Specialized Trust Company just about 3-4 months ago in Texas. And he had a crew out there, actually one person, maybe I think it was actually two people, and really smart guys that are out there just educating people. And I was like, hey, I just want to get to Edwin, man. How do I get to Edwin? So here he is, this guy, a little bit about Edwin. Edwin is America's leading expert on self-directed retirement accounts, which is an amazing topic, and self-directed investment strategies. I mean, this is big chunks right here that get broken down, and I'm really looking forward to breaking these down. And he has more than 23 and a half years experience in the financial services industry. Edwin is also a founder of currently serves as CEO of Specialized Trust Company. So Edwin, I am like just so grateful that you have the time to come on with the MF Cashflow and show and podcast and just educate the audience. And I have no doubt in my mind at all that you will more than deliver. And if for any reason, I'm sure that these people will be reaching out to you and getting more education and learning how to move forward and make a difference in their life. One of the things, Edwin, that I mentioned on pretty much all my podcasts are to live fully, love openly, and make a difference. And I can tell just in this little nugget right here is huge. This is another make a difference in other people's lives, right? And not wait till you're on your deathbed, because it's too fucking late then, man. So, but Edwin, tell me, how in the world did you get involved into a self-directed retirement account, self-directed investment strategies? What prompted you to get into this industry?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes version. But the Cliff Notes version is, you know, it actually started for me, believe it or not, back in sixth grade.
Wow.
So I would love to take my 24 years of experience and add it to, you know, being in sixth grade. That made me about 30 years old, maybe. I don't know. But I was older than that, actually. But yeah, in sixth grade, what happened was, you know, I grew up, I was raised by a single mom. My dad wasn't in the picture. She was a social worker for the state of Ohio, didn't make a lot of money. And so I started working when I was in sixth grade.
Wow.
And I worked, and I would work, and I'd buy my own clothes. Like, I'd take the bus, you know, I'd take two buses to get to the mall, buy my own clothes. Like, you know, so I started early, I guess you could say. And I, when I say I was working, I was doing odd jobs, right? Because as a kid, like, what can you do, right? Well, you can rake leaves, you can mow lawns, you can shovel driveways.
Yeah.
Some other things. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff I did, made some money. And so by the time I got to middle school, I was a saver. So I saved the money and a lot of it, and had enough money. And I don't even know how I figured this out, but I bribed my grandfather into opening up what's called an UGMA account.
Oh yeah, right? Sure.
Open it up and buy
like gift to my stack or something like that. Yeah,
exactly. So I ended up buying stocks. I bought my first stock when I was in middle school. I started buying stocks throughout high school.
This is awesome.
But the thing is, so the interesting thing though is that by the time I got to my mid 20s, I had already been through several market cycles, right? Because I started so early.
Yeah, right.
So to summarize that, you know, I saw things grow, and you know, we've heard a lot of great news lately about the stock market, and that's always great. But the problem is, what follows the great news is the bad news, right? And there's no way you can predict it. You know,
sure, yeah.
I saw
you don't have the crystal ball.
Yeah. I mean, I saw it grow and I saw it retract, and I see it grow and then I just get wiped out. Right. And I'm like, there's gotta be a better way to do this.
Yeah.
So I started looking into and learning about alternative investments, which by the way, really drives me nuts because, you know, real estate kind of falls into that category. But the last time I checked, real estate has been around a little longer than the stock market. But at any rate, you know, that's the alternative. So fine. The reason why I got into the retirement account side of it was because, and I'm sure we're going to get into this, but there's, in my opinion, it's one of the best ways to hold assets. It is one of the best, fastest, most efficient ways to create wealth, reduce taxes, layer in asset protection. I mean, build your legacy for your children, your grandchildren, whatever's important to you. I mean, there's just like so many benefits when you invest using these type of vehicles. And so when you bring the two together, it's like magic, you know? And so anyway, it was kind of a long journey to get there.
Yeah.
I figured it out, put it together, and then here we are.
And you figured it out at a very young age. And actually your story kind of reminds me a little bit about myself, except I started working when I was 13, and I think I bought my first stock when I was like 16 or something like that. Yeah. So just some penny stock, lost my ass on it, but hey, you know, it was interesting because I always wanted to play. I remember looking at years ago, I don't read the paper anymore, but you know, you look at the paper and you're looking at all these stocks and what does all this mean? And my curiosity has to do with money and how do I, you know, get involved in this, you know? So yeah, it's interesting. And I even opened up one of those UGMA things too, you know, that, and since then really educated myself. Oh man. Probably about 8 years, 9 years ago or so. And, you know, I went through a divorce and cleaned out my IRA, didn't even know about self-directed IRAs or anything, and left with very little, and just got educated. And just like we're sitting here right now, right? I just got educated, and I took that little chunk there and added what I could to it every year. And it's been growing and partnered up with, we can talk about that a little bit. I partnered up with some other companies and built it up from there. And today, and we're building homes. I've got a rental portfolio inside there. And I freaking love this business. So now that I hope people's ears are like, whoa, what are they talking about, man? So what, Edwin, what is a self-directed IRA? What, kind of break it down.
Yeah, so a self-directed IRA is an IRA that allows you and I, well, actually, let me take a step back. I want to say it this way, because a lot of people don't get this point of it.
Yeah.
A self-directed IRA is an IRS-approved vehicle, okay? So it's an IRS-approved vehicle that allows you and I to get complete control over the money in our retirement account.
Yeah.
Invest in anything allowed by the government, which is you're going to find out is virtually everything and anything, almost.
Right.
Almost, and make money tax protected, meaning we don't pay, you know, capital gains tax or income tax or any of those things as we go through time.
Sure.
So our money goes exponentially faster and larger.
Yeah.
And then when we want to spend that money, we get to spend it either with fewer taxes on that income.
Yeah.
Or no taxes at all, depending upon which type of an account you have. So that's what a self-directed IRA is.
It's a tax-protected account that allows us to get control of money and allow you to virtually anything so long as the government allows it.
Hey, Edwin, something happened with the microphone. I'm not sure if it's your end or my end.
Can you hear me?
It's really awful.
Hold on. Let's try something here.
I don't know if it's...
Hear me now?
I can hear you, yes.
Is it okay or is it cloudy?
No, it was like really bad before, but that's cool. So let's go ahead and pick up again with the with what you were talking about. Let's just pick up from the beginning, the IRA and building it much faster and okay. Being tax-free.
Okay, so what is a self-directed IRA?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So what is a self-directed IRA? A self-directed IRA is an IRS-approved vehicle that allows you and I to get complete control over the money, okay? Invest in anything allowed by the government, right? It grows tax-protected, which means we don't pay capital gains tax or income tax as we go, so the money grows exponentially faster and larger, right?
Yeah, love it.
And then in the end, right, when we want to spend money from that account, we can spend it and we pay fewer taxes on that income, or what's referred to as distributions, or we pay no taxes at all, depending upon what type of an account we're using.
Bam! Man, that's a huge statement right there. And so like the difference really is, if I'm understanding this correctly, and regular IRA, you just like you probably go to like a money market or mutual fund or something like that, where other people are investing your money. And a self-directed IRA, you are in charge of what it is that you want to invest in. I think it's actually probably easier to say the things that you can't invest in versus the things you can invest in. If I recall right, it's very minimal what you can't invest in. Real estate is definitely in my, I don't know many other ones that, but for me, it works very well for me in the IRA realm. Does that sound right?
Yep, absolutely. So, I mean, effectively, yeah, what, you know, you refer to it as regular IRA. I call it a plain vanilla IRA. The IRA retirement account, by the way, Mike, when I say IRA, there's all kinds of accounts out there. So I kind of use IRA or self-directed IRA as a general placeholder, if you will, or a label. Sure. Self-directed accounts. There's all kinds of self-directed accounts you can self-direct.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I say a plain vanilla IRA is one that most people have, right? It's what you get at your bank or your brokerage house, which the big names everybody's familiar with. And they pretty much limit you to stocks, bonds, mutual funds, and CDs. Mm. So a self-directed IRA says, basically, you can invest, we go beyond that, right? You go and invest in anything that the government allows. As you mentioned, real estate is a big one. Real estate, notes, mortgages, deeds of trust, I mean, it's just, it really runs a gambit.
So do you have to be self-employed to have a self-direct IRA?
Nope, that's the great thing about it. So there's different, I group accounts into three categories. So the first account or category is an individual retirement account, okay, IRA. We're all individuals, therefore we basically qualify as an individual, okay, to have an account. The second category is what we call company-sponsored plans or small business retirement plans. Those are your SEP simples, 401ks, Roth 401ks, individual Ks. People refer to them as qualified plans. But there, you need to have a business to sponsor one of those plans. So if you have a business, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're self-employed, then you qualify for that as well as, in addition to, right, an IRA.
Sure.
And
yeah.
The third and final category, what we call tax advantage savings accounts or specialty accounts. So like a health savings account, believe it or not, you can self-direct. I have it. It's an amazing account. Wonderful. Education savings accounts for the kids or grandkids, right? You can self-direct those accounts.
So
those are the accounts that fall into three categories. And so everybody's an individual, so we all qualify for IRAs, and then some people qualify for the small business retirement plan.
That's amazing. Man, this is really good stuff here. So, like, what are the rules? Like, if you were to have a self-directed IRA and purchase a home with it, and you know, for the passive income, what are the rules there? I mean, can you go out there and hang a door and change a faucet, or is that prohibited?
Great question. And so I'll say that there's three clear things that the government quote prohibits. And so when I talk about prohibited transactions, let me say this: the government, believe it or not, doesn't like to take a lot of responsibility. What they do like to do is put the responsibility on someone else. Mm. What does that have to do with retirement account investing? It has everything to do with it. Because what the government did when they wrote the rule book when it comes to retirement accounts, they don't tell us what we can do, they tell us what we cannot do.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they told us we could do something and we did it, we might blame them if it didn't work out, right? So what we're looking at are what we cannot do, i.e. prohibited transactions. Okay, that's the term. So there's a few things we can't do. So one of the things we can't do is buy life insurance. So that's one thing we can't invest in. Okay. One thing we cannot do is buy collectibles. So things like artwork, beer, believe it or not, yeah, that's specified. No beer, drink. Sorry guys, you can buy beer, you just can't buy it in your IRA. So no collectibles. And then there's no self-dealing. Now, self-dealing is basically where, to make it simple, where you can't take something you own already. So you already own a lot of real estate, right? So
yeah.
You can't take your existing real estate that you own and put it in your IRA. Now, you can buy new real estate in your IRA, but anything you own personally doesn't go in there. That's self-dealing, basically, in a nutshell. Kind of a spin-off of that is, along that self-dealing concept, is that the government says, you know what? We don't want you providing a service to your retirement account or to investments held in your retirement account. So as an example, if you were to, you know, paint a room, fix a toilet, change a light bulb, the reason why you do, right, you're doing that, that's providing a service. That's different than managing the investment. You're permitted to manage your investments in your retirement account. You just can't provide a service to that.
So you can do your own property management because you're not really doing anything to the home, correct?
Right. So like as an example, as the manager of an investment for your retirement account, is it possible for you to identify the tenant and say, this is what the rent's going to be for the property? Absolutely. Can you say, hey, I'm going to hire this plumber to go out and fix the toilet for the property owned by my IRA? Yes. Instruct your IRA custodian, i.e. specialized trust company, to pay the plumber. Yes, you can do that. But could you go fix the toilet yourself? No. That's the service part. So that's the part you have.
That would be the prohibited transaction, as you called it, right? So what are some of the other things that when that you see people investing in besides real estate?
You know, it's interesting because, and that's one of the things that I love about self-directing, because like I said, when you start, if you think about the things you can't do, collectibles and life insurance, virtually everything else is available, right? So how does that show up in real life? Well, it's interesting because I see all kinds of things. Real estate continues to drive self-directed retirement account investments, okay? And that could be somebody buying a property that they want to own, a single family home in their property, in their retirement account.
Sure.
I see a lot of people do private equity deals. And a private equity deal can be a real estate play or not. But as an example, I have a client who I work with, and he's a good friend of mine, and he does apartment complex investing. So what he does is he goes out and raises private money, right? And that private money being people who have retirement accounts or people who just have cash who want to invest but don't know how to invest maybe.
Okay.
And they'll use their retirement account money to invest in that commercial project or in that apartment building, right? And they get a portion of the rents. They get a portion of the profits if they sell the property, right?
Sure, right.
So like participating in a syndication or a deal like that is one.
Good
cryptocurrencies
stuff.
Are becoming more popular. So we see people investing in cryptocurrencies, physical precious metals.
Wow. Okay.
We see a lot of note investing. So you know, that's the interesting thing. A lot of real estate investors in particular, or a lot of small businesses or private businesses, they have a need for capital, and right, to manage their operations, to grow their operations, you know, for different things. As business owners, right, we get that. And so, but the challenge is they don't really have access to the capital markets the same way that, you know, the big, you know, Fortune 500 companies do. So one of the things that we see is that there's a lot of people who use their retirement account and lend money to a business or investment and those types of things. So in that case, right, the IRA owns a note, right, or perhaps a mortgage or some sort of asset like that. So we see a lot of note investing taking place. There's a lot of inquiries about cannabis these days. The answer is right now, no, because it's still prohibited because of federal banking guidelines. So you can't do that. That's one I get asked about every once in a while. I'm like, where are the good old days when everybody just want to buy a piece of real estate?
Now they want to invest in cannabis.
But I've seen it get as creative where people have purchased like mineral rights, you know, oil and gas partnerships.
Yeah.
I've seen them buy actual livestock. Livestock, I mean, I didn't know about this till I got into this business, but livestock is big business and big money, right? And you can buy cattle and, I mean, all kinds of things. I actually sat down with my office one day and helped a guy map out. He was a pig farmer up in the northeast U.S. And he was like the third generation. And he says, you know, I'm the one who's going to take our business nationwide. He's like, I'm not going to be the statistic where by the third generation, the business is gone. I want to take it nationwide. And I'm going to own pigs across the United States. And very cool, funny, ambitious guy. And his business was pig farming. But again, people were investing in buying pigs as a way of expanding that business across the U.S. I mean, it's like you'd be amazed at the creativity people have when it comes to money.
Yeah, that is really being creative. I'm going to invest in pigs. Come on. Yeah. I can't say I'd be motivated on that one, but you know.
Just to be fair, for the vegans in the audience, I've seen people, okay, I actually have a client help him do this deal. He structured and invested in pistachio trees. So actually invested, bought pistachio trees. You look at the number on pistachios, it's pretty staggering. Talk about a business model. But anyway, so just to be fair, okay, we took care of the carnivores as well as the vegans today.
There you go. Yeah, thanks for balancing that out. I appreciate that.
Hey, it's fair and balanced, Edwin Kelly, brother.
Yeah, right. The meat lovers blocked out the vegan part. Thank you for that. So can you explain to me like a little bit more complex of a situation, maybe where somebody has a self-directed IRA, but you want to partner with somebody else that has a self-directed IRA. You mentioned syndication, but maybe more on a smaller level. You can speak a little bit on, if you could just talk about horizontal versus vertical, you know, the family and friend part there, who you can partner with and what does that look like and who you can't partner with.
Yeah, well, so what I will say is that you can partner your retirement account with virtually anyone or anything. Now there's rules around that and that's where it gets a little tricky. Here's the other thing that I tell people is that I say, just because you can do something doesn't necessarily mean you should do it. Right? And so it really comes back to the client's goals and what makes the most sense. Now, having said that, I'll give you an example of a partnership I did. So what I did is that, of course, I have a self-directed retirement account and I had connected with an investor who I knew. And this is going back several years, but this is a good illustration of what you're talking about. He had just a machine going at that time up in Michigan. And he was doing deals and he was just, I mean, it was just crazy the amount of money he was making. His biggest limiting factor was that he needed more capital to fund the deals, right? And to buy the assets and acquire those. And so that was the biggest limiting factor that he had. And I knew that. So I went to him and I said, hey, I said, I'd love to do a couple of deals with you. And what I'll do is I'll put up the money and you do the work because you've already got the system, you got it all built in, and we'll go in 50-50 on those deals. And he said, Edwin, he says, I'd love to have you invest with me. And he says, you know, I pay my investors a solid 8-10% fixed rate of return, you know, when they invest with us. And I say, well, I understand that, but I'm not an 8-10% investor. I'm an equity partner on deals that I do. So, you know, 50% is the offer. And he says, yeah, he says, I'm not giving you half the deal. And I said, okay, fair enough. So every 30 days or so, I checked in with him and I just said, hey, you know, how are you doing? Have you reconsidered my offer? And he says, no. He says, if you reconsider buying, and I say, no, you know. And so this went on for a few months. And finally, one day he calls me and he says, hey, he says, I've reconsidered your offer and I'm willing to do, let's do a few deals together.
Yeah.
And I said, okay, well, what changed your mind? Because there's a right and wrong answer to that question, right? And he said, well, I decided that 100% or 50% of something was better than 100% of nothing.
Correct.
Yeah. You're right. I'm walking past deals that I can't do because I don't have the capital. So he said, it's not what I'm used to making on a transaction, but I'm still going to make money on it. So let's do it.
Yeah.
The way we structured that one was in that particular case, there was an LLC set up. There were two members of that LLC. One was my retirement account. One was him.
Okay.
I provided in that scenario 100% of the capital, right? He provided the work to make the investment work. He went out and found the real estate, managed the real estate, did those kinds of things.
Sure.
Yeah. So in that case, the way it was structured, it was actually a very, very simple transaction because my IRA had it was a 50% member, right, of that entity. Now, if we would have taken direct title to the asset, the real estate itself, it would have been a 50% undivided interest holder, right? And, or owner, and it would have received half the income or half the profits as that those were generated from that particular asset. So it's really a matter of putting it, you know, it's really comes back to titling. Okay.
Yeah.
Now the other aspect to your question though was more of around, you know, there's some people that you can't, can you do business with them, partner? You know, people use different terms. And what there are people that are listed in the code. They're referred to as disqualified individuals. A disqualified individual is someone who cannot do business with your retirement account. Mm. So who are those people? That's kind of who you're asking about.
Yes.
The easiest way to remember this is up and down your family tree. It's your grandparents, your parents, yourself, your spouse, your children, your grandchildren. Okay, so grandparents, parents, yourself, your spouse, children, grandchildren can't do business with your retirement account. So as an example, how does that show up? I'll give you a couple quick examples. You brought up fixing the toilet. Let's say your son's a plumber. You can't hire him to go fix the toilet on your retirement account properties. You say, but I pay somebody else the same price.
Yeah.
The IRS doesn't care. The IRS cares about the rules. They don't care about the fact that you pay somebody different. You can't, right? So that's an example. If your daughter wanted to rent one of your rental properties that's owned by your retirement account, right? Can't do that. That's an example of how that plays out.
Yeah. I think I've even heard, so I've got, I don't have any in my IRA, but I have, some short-term rentals, Airbnbs.
Yeah.
I believe I heard also, that I couldn't stay in there or, you know, the same thing, the family couldn't stay in there either. So yeah, it's something to keep in mind. I don't know like who's going to run around and be the little snitch here, but you know,
yeah. Well, I tell people, here's what I tell people, Mike, I tell them, here's the thing. I'm here to tell you what the rules are. Yeah. You know, what you do with those is up to you. But like, I always tell people, you got to follow the rules. Yeah. You never want to not follow the rules. Is there somebody going around checking? No. Well, I don't know. Maybe there is. But the point is that the key is, here's the other thing I'll say about that. Most people, when they build their wealth, and this is the cool thing about the rules, actually. I don't have so much of a problem with the rules anymore. When I first started, right, in the business, I really started to understand stuff. It's like a lot of people, it's like, oh, man, I don't like some of these rules. But the truth is, the rules are kind of common sense rules. Mm. And so nobody that I know of who built their wealth themselves built it by anything that would violate a rule, that, you know, the violate a rule. The way we make our money has nothing to do with the things that we're not supposed to do.
Sure.
But, I mean, there might be a few inconveniences like, hey, I own this Airbnb and it's down on the beach in Florida. Man, would I like to stay there? Yeah, you can't. That's just the deal.
Right.
Write your congressman, ask him to change that rule, but you know, that's the deal.
Right. If that's your only problem, you really don't have a problem, you know.
Yeah. So,
you can learn from that. Give me a couple success stories that you know of people that may have started out with. Let me back up. Well, how much do you need to actually start a self-direct IRA, and then coming from there, go into a success story that you're familiar with, like, hey, this guy started out with $3,000 or something, X time, and then today here he has this because he's done X, Y, Z.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I could give you so many, but to get started, to answer that first question, it's basically, you know, $1,000 to deposit in your account. So you have some money to work with, right? If it's a brand new account, and first year fees. If you're transferring money or rolling over money, which I guess I should mention that. How do you get money? How do you start a self-directed IRA? Well, the first step is obviously you fill out the application. It takes 10 to 15 minutes. It takes no time at all. So that's the easy part. So that's step one. Step two is you now deposit money in the account. So one way to deposit money is to make a contribution, right? So you haven't earned income this year. You can write a check and deposit it. We say if you're starting a brand new account, you want to have $1,000 in there so you have something to work with, right?
Sure.
But there's no hard and fast limit on what it takes to start. I mean, you can start with, you know, a few hundred bucks, $500 in theory. Another way to fund or deposit money in the account is to transfer money from another IRA. Mm. or roll money over from an old 401k or a 403b if you were on the public side, a TSP, something along those lines, right? So that's how you get the money in the account.
Okay.
So most people who are starting accounts with us start with transfers or rollovers. There's people though who start, probably I'd say a third of the accounts that we open are people who are getting started for the very first time. And so they're just making an initial deposit.
Okay.
And then they're off and running. To give you a couple of success stories, I'll give you one example of a gentleman who, he was about 53 years old. And to me, this is kind of really how it should work, is that he was 53 years old and we met, and this is back in 04, by the way, when this occurred. He was 53 years old at the time. And at that time, he was an attorney. He didn't have any retirement account set up, so he started his first Roth self-directed IRA.
Sure.
And he put $4,000 in it, which was the contribution back then. That's all you could put back then, right? It's gone up since then. And his idea was, he says, you know what? I don't want to work for the rest of my life. I don't want to work till the day I die. So I'm going to acquire rental properties in this self-directed Roth. One of the benefits of a Roth is that as long as you meet the qualifications, you get to spend all the money you make from the Roth 100% tax free, no capital gains tax, no income tax, no tax at all. But he says, well, I can make up for lost ground, right? Getting started at 53, if I don't ever have to pay tax again. So that's why I'm going to use the Roth. He says, I'm going to buy real estate in there. I'm going to buy rental, single family homes, buy rental properties. And then that rental income will be my retirement income. And I can step out of my job around age 60 or so, you know, 60, 65. So that was the plan. The challenge is, right, he's got a Roth self-directed account. He's got $4,000 in it. And so the next question is, well, how do you go out and build a
corporate? Right? Yeah.
Well, one of the things that you can do, which a lot of people, again, they don't know. So this is one of the legal back doors to the contribution limit and relying on your own cash.
This is good stuff.
Is that, believe it or not, the government says if you don't have enough money in your account to do a deal or you just don't want to use your own cash, you're allowed to borrow inside the retirement account. Now, there's rules around that, which we just for the sake of time, we won't get into that today, but no, just know that that is one of, so what we teach our clients, when somebody comes to client with us, we educate them on all this stuff. And there's three core deal structures that we teach people that they can use. So one of them is leverage, right? Borrowing money. So that's what he did. So he used a little bit of money as a down payment, borrowed some money, bought a property, right? Rented it out. And he did basically repeated that process over and over and over again. So fast forward, January 2015, we had gotten together, and what he told me was that his monthly distribution that he was able to take that month was $7,000, 100% tax-free.
Wow. The
amazing thing is that he had acquired so many properties. This particular client was in Ohio, but he acquired so many properties over that period of time that every single month he had a property pay off. He wouldn't take any income from a property until the mortgage was fully paid off, right? Because he didn't want to lose that income, right?
Yeah.
So he basically starting that year in 15, pretty much every month he got a pay raise, right? Because the property paid off, now he could take some income out.
Right.
So fast forward, okay, 3 years later, his income had risen to $40,000 a month.
Wow. Great. Yeah.
And so now that's a home run, right? But you know what's funny is that he was just consistent, and he just got a lot of little base hits along the way. And that's how it works. When you take taxes out of the equation, when you buy the right assets, when you generate cash flow, and that compounds,
right?
Like we talked about earlier, that's the exponential compounding,
right?
And people have no idea how fast you can create money when you take taxes out of the equation, because we're all used to paying so much in taxes.
So
I mean, it's incredible what you can do.
Yeah, very much incredible. That's a great, great story. And at 53, well, I'm 53 right now, and I'm like listening to this with both ears like glued to the speaker, man. Like, whoa, you know, and I've already got a head start on this cat. So I'm super excited, man. This is very encouraging, and I'm sure the listeners are super encouraged as well. So good stuff. Thanks for sharing that. So like, tell me, like, you know, you're building up all this wealth. How is it, you know, like, you're buying real estate, is there any kind of protection here at all? Because obviously if you put it in the bank, it's that FDIC, you know, protected, or maybe, is there any kind of insurance on this, or are you just, you know, no risk, no reward, or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, well, there's a lot of protection actually. And it just depends what angle we're talking about it from. So let me talk about from the outside in, and then we'll talk about from the inside out.
Okay.
So from the outside in, right, I'm me, you're you. And the great thing about the retirement account is that, now I'm going to make a general statement about retirement accounts. There are some distinctions between, say, an IRA and a 401k, but I'm going to make a general statement here. Okay, your IRAs, your retirement accounts are virtually judgment proof in all 50 states. So what that means is if somebody were to sue you, right, they can't attach judgment to any asset held inside your retirement account. Okay. If you were tried and convicted of a criminal offense, right, the court could actually take your life, but can't take your retirement account. That doesn't seem right, but that's how it works. So, you know, the asset protection, QRPs, the 401ks I referenced earlier, are asset protected at the federal level. IRAs, you got to look at on a state-by-state basis. That's why I say there are some nuances. But they pretty much all afford a lot of asset protection to some degree, outside looking in. Okay. Just as a quick side note, just to be, because I don't want to get some comment on, but wait a minute, you didn't say this. Yes. Are there exceptions to the judgment-proof rule? Absolutely. There's two. One is the IRS, right? Let's face it, they're going to do whatever they want to do. And the other one is in the event of divorce, as you mentioned earlier when we got started, right? The court can issue a quadro, split the assets, including the retirement account, down the middle. But outside of that, right, somebody outside come and try to sue me for something, right? Set protection. What about from the inside? Well, the great thing about it is, Mike, is that there's just a ton of protection in that. So to your point, your cash is insured up to $250,000, FDIC insured. That's true inside of, or at least with us, if that's true with a retirement account, you know. Okay. The other thing is that as a self-directed IRA provider and a custodian, we have to have E&O insurance, right, and errors and omissions and all these kinds of things that go beyond that, and there's capital requirements. So from a financial institution standpoint, we're held accountable, as all financial institutions are, right? There's certain requirements based on the licenses we have. So you have those protections in place. But to me, the best protection that clients have when they self-direct their retirement accounts are the things that they're putting their money in, right? Because one of the great things about it is that you, if you own a house, as an example, like, and we'll go back to the I just referenced a little while. He bought a portfolio of single family homes, right? He knows what his money is invested in. It doesn't matter if the market goes up. It doesn't matter if the market goes down, right? The stock market has no bearing on his retirement account or how much money he's going to get to spend this month. Has nothing to do with it. That true. And now, do you need insurance on those properties? Absolutely, right? If you're going to own, I always say, insurance is the first line of defense for real estate. And so that doesn't change inside the IRA or outside, right? That's always going to be the case. So that's where I say, yeah. So to your point, yeah, there's insurance that you would get there if you own real estate. So there's a lot of protections. But like I said, to me, the best protection is that you actually know what your money's invested in because you put it there.
Wow, this is all, man, you've got many, many, many years of experience here. And I know your team is uber educated as well. Like, it's just, it's overwhelming. I can't even imagine, like, the number of stories, as you mentioned, of just success stories, right? Of how this is life-changing. This is literally life-changing. I feel like anytime you can tell the IR and the S to fuck off is a good day, man. You know, like, I don't want to pay anything. I'm like, no, man, if they're going to give us that outlet to go down, then we need to do it. And, you know, like, every once in a while you'll hear of, you know, somebody, you know, in the a politician that is extremely wealthy and not paying any taxes, which is probably most. How do they do that? They get educated by people like you, Edwin, and they're running with it. Why? Because they know. They know where the hell to go. They're on the inside, you know, like, they know. They already figured this out. So this is where I just hope that our listeners are like absorbing this, because this is so fruitful. And if you don't take action, and I say it often, if you don't take massive action, then shame on you. Because literally, you can start this out. Most people have at least even $500. And Edwin just shared with you, even if you have as little as $500 or $1,000. And here's this guy here that started out at 53. And how many years later did he? I mean, he's like
15 would have been 11 years later, and then 18 would have been 14 years later. So 11 and 14 years later are the two time frames I gave you. Yeah.
Yeah, $47,000 a month. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I mean, that's a huge success story, and kudos to him, man. That's freaking awesome. And it's all tax free. Come on, man. And he's still got the asset. The asset out there. Cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. How many millions of dollars does he have in assets sitting there just growing and growing and growing? You know, like, it's crazy. That's awesome. And it all tax free. So Edwin, how does somebody get in touch with you to learn more about this? Because this is really mind blowing stuff.
Yeah. So the best way to do it is to go to specializedtrust.com, specializedtrustcompany.com. It helps if I know my own URL. specializedtrustcompany.com. What you'll find out is that one of the things we're doing right now for a limited time is we're giving away my most recent book for free, along with a free consultation. So those consultations, depending upon what consultation, what you want done, typically run from $97 to $297, but we're doing those free for now. So you can actually get on the phone with a specialist, ask your questions. Here's my scenario. Here's what I'm trying to accomplish, or I'm not sure what I'm trying to accomplish, right? Where do I start? You know, and they'll start to walk you through that, map that out for you. So it's available for free on our website, specializedtrustcompany.com.
Man, as if it doesn't get any better. I mean, come on, right? That's awesome. Edwin, I appreciate you, man. I appreciate your time, and you know, enjoy the Laguna Beach, man. You know, I'm a little jealous. It's probably about like 23 degrees or 20 in the 20s here in Chicago, and not really enjoyable, you know, unless you like cold weather, which I don't. You know, in Chicago, we get just, you know, maybe 4 or 5 good months, and the rest are for crap, in my own opinion. But, you know, hey, you're blessed to be able to hang out in Laguna for today and enjoy the weather and the sunshine. So, again, I really appreciate you and your experience and your knowledge that you have and your stories. Unbelievable. This is amazing stuff. So, hey, one more time, what's the website?
Specializedtrustcompany.com.
Hey guys, Mike Fisher, MF Cashflow. Today I have with me Edwin Kelly. Edwin is the Chief Executive Officer of the Specialized